Blog Talk Radio.
Get up again and smile. Get up again and smile.
Good morning and welcome to Our Black News. I'm Don Allen, broadcasting live from the library, and over there with the backdrop of the city of Minneapolis is Mr. Jonathan Mason. Good morning, Jonathan. How are you this morning?
I'm good, Don. How are you doing?
I'm doing great here. It's kind of chilly outside. Looks like we might get a little rain, maybe not, but you know, until then, we're here. We have a lot of news today to talk about, things that are going on in our great state of Minnesota and around the country and globally. We'd like, again, to welcome you to Our Black News, formerly the Ron and Don Show. Changed when Jonathan Mason decided to come aboard.
Thank you for having me, too.
I appreciate it. Couldn't think of anybody else. So you're here. We're here. We're doing the damn thing. I'd like to welcome again everybody for listening. This week has been kind of strange, you know, with the uptick in the coronavirus and the things, the violence that's going on. But, you know, earlier this week, I think Wednesday, the young lady, Ariana Buchanega, if I'm pronouncing that correctly, was shot in South Minneapolis, right between 37th and 38th and Cedar, which is a hot spot in South Minneapolis, kind of like Tangletown over there in North Minneapolis. And again, we have not figured out how to get our women of color to stop being shot, killed, molested, domestic violence, no matter how much money they put into it. A lot of this stuff is still going on, and we're trying to figure out, you know, what's happening and who's doing this, who's supposed to do it, who's supposed to make sure that, you know, things like this don't happen. I mean, human nature is fragile in every sense of the word. But then again, when you have a population now that has traditionally and generationally been excluded, when the state shutdown, a stay-at-home order comes in place, those same people are affected more. What are your thoughts, Jonathan?
Well, you know, the last update was she was gravely in grave condition. So, you know, like you said, when a pandemic, which happens, you know, every maybe 100 years, they say, but happens, you know, communities of color get affected more, and our Black women are being shot, being killed, and like you said, basically at the lowest part of the totem pole right now, and this behavior is coming from, you know, drive-by shootings. And so if you know anything, and this might be my input on it, if you know anything and you're tuning into Our Black News, you can call in and you can remain anonymous, you know, and you can let us know maybe if you want to drop some information on. We'll keep you anonymous and we'll get it into the authorities' hands. But this violence has to stop. And, you know, if we're going to hold police accountable, we also hold our own and our own communities accountable too, because you know what? We're trying to stop this violence from happening.
Yeah, exactly. Our call-in number this morning is 347-426-3904. Again, that number is 347-426-3904. It's a toll-free number. You can call and talk to us live during the program. And after the program, this show is available immediately with the same link, and I'll post that on the podcast. Good morning, Miss Queen. Queen Nucci is out there listening. We'd like to say hello to Red Chapman. We'd like to say hello to Samuel, Benjamin Gross, Tia Blade. Everybody that's tuning in this morning, we greatly appreciate it. So how has distant learning been going for you around there? But wait, go ahead.
No, since I do have three kids, you know, since I do have three children on it, and I'm having them work on all the various laptops. Oh yeah, three with four on the way. I got a baby boy on the way.
Oh wow! Congratulations.
Yeah. Oh yeah. I'm busy over here.
I see that.
I'm busy.
Corona. Corona baby.
Yeah, but so yeah, it doesn't stop. Well, I think maybe it might stop after this one, but what I've noticed is the inequities. It's really hard. And, you know, the teachers are, you know, first, I always want to shout out to the teachers. I know you're a teacher, and I'm not just saying that because you are a teacher. You know, I've been on the front lines of educational justice, so I know that the inequities are there. But this distance learning, you know, you got a lot of kids in there. I'm listening, you know, I'm paying attention, and you're seeing them. Some of them can't log in. Their parents' internet connections are coming out. They can't see the screen of the teacher. One of the kids wants the teacher to only have him on the screen, and she had to mute him. And so there's a lot of stuff that's going on, and I'm like, oh, my gosh. And as a parent, I'm like, is this going on? I'm asking my child, is this going on in your school every day? So, you know, this stuff is happening regularly, but it's really hard. We got to get out in front of it, you know, and that's why we're demanding Minnesota leadership, whether it be NDE and, you know, to work with guys like us who know the system and say, hey, look, these are the things and challenges that our community is facing, and let us give you an insight to some of these inequities so we can be able to help change it. And these are the things that I'm seeing. What have you been seeing over there as a teacher?
It's kind of unusual because, I mean, the kids, the seniors have what's called senioritis right now. So they're really not trying to log in and do very much in the bare minimum. And, you know, as a teacher, you have to be flexible.
And they've made it already.
Yeah. You got to be flexible. You have to be obsessed. You have to be collaborative. And you don't want to give them any more than they can chew right now. Because, again, like you said, you might have 3 to 5 kids in one household with one Wi-Fi spot. And if all those kids are online at the same time, it's going to be a problem. Someone just asked me, I'm going to post a telephone.
And the dad might be on the laptop.
Yeah. And if the parents are working at home, like in our house, both my wife and I work from home every day. And
Then
again, we're not webline like other people, other communities are. We have a very fast Wi-Fi connection. Each of our phones and our iPads have their own hotspot. So if we get into a clutch, we can switch quickly and still stay on pace. Whereas a family that has, you know, 3 to 5 kids in the public schools in Minneapolis or St. Paul or around Minnesota, you know, that might create a problem.
Right.
And if the parents are familiar with the different software that the kids have to use, then they have to learn it. The thing is, you know, we gave our students laptops and iPads, but we never really taught technology. And I'm not guilting anybody at all whatsoever. Yeah. It was a novelty instead of a tool. And we should have made it more emphasized, this is a tool, and these are all the platforms you can use. Because like right now, even with my seniors, this is hilarious because I had to make sure there's a group project. There's 4 people in a group. So I had to walk every student in a mass meeting of how to use Google Meet, how to contact your group members, how to have these personalized meetings, how to record them.
Right.
Because that's part of the grade. They have to record the meeting and send it to me so I can make sure they're on task and give my critique. And so with that said, let's see, 426. I'm sorry, someone asked me for the number. I'm going to write it on the Facebook page there so you guys can see it. It's 347-426.
Right. And as you're writing that.
Go ahead.
I was going to say, as you're writing that, you know, you touched on some major points. Some of the assignments, you know, seem like they're minimal sometimes. But we haven't taught this technology in a school like we've been talking about on our show and many times beforehand in the educational systems where we're saying, hey, teach technology. Don Allen knows exactly what to do, and he knows exactly what to do. We're ahead of the curve right now. You could be teaching some of this stuff. But, you know, once again, it's do we hold our hand as a teacher?
Yeah.
You know, and it's hard. It's hard to
say. Well, this is a great opportunity for the state to come in and figure out how they can fund different organizations, like the Minnesota Teachers Union with Rashad and a couple other folks on there are trying to help people navigate, you know, all this. And so there's too many. The main complaint that I'm hearing from my viewpoint, my perspective, alleged, for lack of better terminology, is that the parents don't understand the technology and what the kids got to do. So if your parent, if the parents are getting emails, my all my students, all their parents get an email from me every week. It just gives you an update. And if they're not responding, and it's really weird, only two parents out of about 153 students responded. And so you're wondering, like, what's going on? And these parents.
And you know what's so crazy, too, is, I don't mean to cut you off, but you know what's so crazy? A lot of our kids live with their grandparents. So when you're talking to a 70-year-old, you know, you're sending a message to an 80- or 70-year-old person via email, and they I don't even know how to work my cell phone. And now the kids are, Grandma, come on, you just tell me about the email. What's going on? And now, man, I'm failing. And what do we do about those cracks? And those are major holes within the educational system that we need to address.
Well, just think of the 35- to 40-year-old grandmothers. And what's going on. There's a few of those out there, too, that, you know, they work in the service industry, and they're currently unemployed, and they're not really thinking about getting on to Schoology, Fate, or any Seesaw, or TikTok, or Epic, or anything else.
Excel.
They're trying to live. And so if they're trying to live, you know, that circumvents and supersedes any of the schoolwork. So again, like I said in the beginning, you have a bunch of students that didn't have any equity in the classroom, and they certainly, equity is not going to grow automatically at their house on an iPad doing schoolwork. So I guess whenever school gets back in session, we're going to have to figure out how we address this inside the classroom, because I'm going to tell you there's going to be an opportunity to do this distance learning again. Until this virus, until they develop a cure, a vaccine, or something like that. Again, our number is 347-426-3904. That number, again, is 347-426-3904 if you have any comments or questions. And I'd like to send a shout-out to KG, my man, KG Wilson, on the spot doing the visuals. And it's you know, I'd rather KG be doing something else than doing visuals everywhere. You know, KG would be a great person to go around and talk about the success of different agencies, but unfortunately in the Twin Cities, we don't have that. We have a lot of shooting going on, a lot of killing, a lot of beating.
It's so unfortunate. And you touched on a major point, and I want to jump back to a thing that you said. A lot of our economy isn't going to be started back up until we do get a vaccine or we do get some of the fail safes in place before we get back up to running quote unquote normal. Because I know as the black community, the elderly black community is being just ravaged with COVID-19. These inequities are going to continue and they're going to rise, and we're not going to be able to go back to work. And if a lot of these people who are getting sick are essential workers, what does our economy look like? Are white people willing to go to the farms and pick fruit? Are you guys willing to go to the meat market? Are you willing to go to the meat market down in Worthington, where all of them are getting sick, and they're saying that there's a huge explosion of COVID-19 within Minnesota? I think we touched on this briefly about the night ago. Minnesota, there's two places in the whole entire United States, including the territories, that are failing and doing actually miserable and abysmal. But guess who it is? Minnesota and Puerto Rico, okay?
Yeah.
The reason why Puerto Rico is just because, you know, just the poverty and stuff like that. Minnesota, we have no excuse for what it is. This is not what there is. A lot of people are thinking it's not real, but because of a certain community is getting ravaged, and we only have a 6%. You know, the elderly are getting ravaged as well.
Yeah.
You know, the nursing homes and stuff like that. And so we have to address that. But when you look at the numbers, disproportionately, it's those who are in essential worker roles who are being affected. So we're not going to be able to get back to running normal. And it might be, if another wave comes, we have to plan, and this is what I really like Tim Walz to do, Governor Tim Walz to do, plan for distant learning for next year as well, you know.
No.
And I know as a parent of going to be four kids, and I'm a business owner, and I'm doing Block Talk Radio, it's going to be almost like a circus, me juggling all these different things. And I know a lot of parents are thinking about this. Well, what if the kids all have to stay at home and do distance learning? That means you might have to work from home or figure it out. And a lot of parents aren't prepared because they've been used to dropping their kids off at 8 in the morning or 7 in the morning and picking them up at 5. Okay. That might not be the case.
That's true. We had a couple callers call. Please call back. I apologize. I wasn't even looking at the screen. I will get you on immediately. That number is 347-426-3904. Queen Nucci, come on, call back. Let's talk about the food insecurities. It was really funny. I was talking to a Minnesota State Senator on yesterday who told me that 90% of these cases are in nursing homes and the meat packing plant. And he says, guess who's working at the meat packing plant that have all these in Minnesota who have all these corona tested positive? And I said, well, isn't that the Hispanic Latino population? And he says, no, it's the Somali population. And
right.
I was kind of shocked at that because there's been a total change of what's going on, you know, in those areas where Hormel and those different meat packing plants are. And we do
right.
have a caller. We do have a caller. She did call back. Caller 3275, you're live on Our Black News. What's your question or comment? And who's calling? Caller, you're live on air. 3205, you're 3275, you're live on the air. Go ahead. Okay. Let's put them in the queue. We have
right.
we have another.
This is me, John.
Have, who is this?
No, it's
just a minute.
Can you hear me, Don?
I can hear you now. Hey Queen, how are you?
I can hear you.
Hello.
Go ahead. Yeah, we hear you.
Okay, so I can't be on live, I see, and be on your call show because it'll get the echoing. But, you know, I just wanted to tell you that this virus is disrupting a lot of things, and we really have not looked at the depths of what's really happening. Our economy is failing. Not just to compound it with our education for children is going to be disrupted, but we are going to start seeing food insecurities when you have people working at these plants that are infected and that the possibilities of them infecting, you know, this virus mutating and going back to animal. It is one of the most
right.
scariest things
right.
that I've ever experienced. And lucky for me, I learned to build up my immune system every day by dealing with oregano oil and elderberry juice.
Yep.
And
yes.
I just think that you have to learn how to build up your immune system so that more people started, you know, if you are out in public, of course, they're not telling us that even as you speak, that that's why it's important to have those face masks on. And so this is critical. This whole thing is very critical. Otherwise, we're going to start disappearing. And it wasn't until I started raising a fuss about us being tested in the black community that I start seeing more people giving out masks because that is scarce not to have these masks, and it's also scarce not to have hand sanitizer or just to be in the know of how many people is accurately tested in these low-income communities because we suffer from diabetes, high blood pressure, coronary heart disease, asthma, bronchitis. And so this is a very serious, serious conversation, and I'm glad that you let me chime in. Thank you, Don.
Thank you for calling. And we have another caller. Last 4-4-6-4-4, you're live on Our Black News. What is your question or comment? Who's calling?
One of the key things that the previous caller says that people should keep their keeping healthy, their immune system up. The human body has been exposed to over 320 trillion, that's trillion with a T, viruses through the history of mankind. And they're all around you. So this will come and it'll go just like other ones I foresee. It's going to have its effects, but, you know, that's life. But on the education,
yeah.
I think this is an opportunity where more implementation of school choice can be put into effect. A school choice with vouchers where the child can be put wherever the parents feel the best for them under the situation and that the money will follow. And I'm down here in the South.
Let me ask you a quick question about that, caller. School choice is an important issue because you know that most parents want their kids to do well in school. Let me give you a scenario. I work for the St. Paul Public School Systems. I'm an English teacher, and my two kids go to what's supposedly the best-kept secret in St. Paul Public Schools, one of the best elementary schools. And for us to keep them at grade-level reading, my wife's a professor, I'm a teacher, we have to get them an outside tutor to come in at $900 a month per kid. Okay, $900 a month per kid and outside.
Let me ask you a question. I hear what you say. Now, did your report card that your child got say that they was doing okay on reading? And I'm gonna say this: if it did not, and you had to go have your child evaluated, which people should do anyway, you should not go by that's what the school did. Have your child independent. Evaluate. Then you should have a movement to make that school district pay for it because they said that they had done what evidentially they did not do.
Yeah, and,
right.
And you're absolutely right on that. And we had them both independently evaluated and found out that my first grader is probably reading right under first grade, and my third grader is reading somewhere between first and second grade. And so you know, we panic because we want our kids to be able to read and write. But just think of all the parents out there that don't have the resources to do this.
Or the means.
Yeah, or the means. And then you're looking at this in the big picture. You know, I understand that this social promotion is a big piece of education in Minnesota. It's like, oh, you're a nice kid. You smile at me every day. You say hello. And you try so hard. I'm going to give you an A.
Well, you know where it really shows up, and I didn't really want to call to get into this, but a lady mentioned before about the impact that things have on blacks. Now, when you look at the data on the far end, for instance, going into your historical black colleges or any college, black children are not prepared when they hit that first year, and they're not prepared because of what's happened before that. You only have five historical black colleges that have a graduation rate above 50% in 6 years. That means that the household is paying 150% more than 50% more than what they normally should in 4 years. So all this has a lot to do with what goes on from the third grade, I'd say, up to the 12th grade. And it's reflected. Blacks only make up between 4-7% of the engineers in the United States. And you make up 13% approximately of the population. That's totally unacceptable. And when you look in the other areas, I tell you what, I'm glad what you've done. Have your children also evaluated in the math and sciences and see how they fare with that. And then go to that school board and say, look, you need to provide funds so that we can have our child brought up to where they're supposed to be like you're supposed to.
Yeah, and I mean, I agree with you, call 100%, and thanks for the call. The thing is, what's happening, and I like to explain this and be very clear and honest with our listening audience right now. Education is really tough right now in Minneapolis, St. Paul, as well as around the state. And this last caller talked about school choice. If you break,
right.
And if you break down and you read the data, for us, black children, we want to send little Tyrone out to Wayzata, because Wayzata is a great school in the suburb, and they have all these resources for the kids. Rarely do our kids do better when they're taken out of their communities, okay, and sent to a school like
right.
that. And they run into
right.
a list of a host of other challenges and issues when we do that. But then again, if you look at the inner city schools, there are some schools, and this is not just me talking, go to the Minnesota Department of Education and you can look up all this data. But you
right.
need to look at the schools in Minneapolis and St. Paul and look how many college students from these high schools are in college after the second year. It will
wow.
blow you
yeah.
away. Like the school I
well.
Work at, we have 5 kids out of 1,000 that might make it to the third year of college. Might. Not saying they did, they might. And
right.
and a lot of them drop out the first year. And the caller was right on point because he talked about the preparedness. And it's not the teacher's fault. I'm not putting it on the students. I'm not putting it on the parents. But it's the system. If the system's not adjusted,
right.
and I'm so glad we're doing distance learning, because that's going to break down this Danielson model, this factory workers model that we use now in the schools, where you sit in a row,
right.
and when the bell rings, you go to the next class. When the bell stops ringing, you better be sitting down.
It's a training complex.
Yeah. And I'm like, okay, our kids they're typing 70 to 80 words a minute on their text messaging, Snapchat, Instagram, Facebook, Twitter, and we need to catch up to them. We need to make
yeah, they're actually it's 100 to 125 words for an 8th to 7th grader per minute. So
yeah.
they're blowing some people out of the water with this technology.
Yeah, and it's very if you can't integrate that technology into your lesson, where the kids, okay, oh, wow, I get to use my cell phone for this. I get to use my iPad for this. Or I get to use my laptop, or I can go talk to
right.
someone. Or I don't have to carry around a book because I have the PDF on a book on my Kindle or on my iPhone
right.
or whatever. You know, I think they appreciate it a little bit more, and I've always tried to, you know, things like Flipgrid, you know. Kids,
right.
when you're doing distance learning, they want to do different things. And so – Flipgrid's really good because I'll ask a question like, what's Bell Hooks' position on postmodernism and black authors? And then rather than writing me the response, they can go to Flipgrid and record a response with them actually talking, and they can see it, and that helps with the comprehension a little bit more. And so when you're doing things like that, and a lot of teachers have been doing this for years, and a lot of teachers just started doing
right.
it. But you get this different kind of quality of individual student, and it's about setting up your routines. You know, you wake up in the morning, you turn on the light on your dresser every morning. That's a routine. And we have to teach our kids about routines, but more so about discernment. How do you discern between right and wrong, or this literature, or that math problem, or this or social studies, et cetera? There's so many pieces of this puzzle that need to be put together that, you know, we are in the early stages. Again, our number is 347-426-3904. That number is 347-426-3904. We'd like to give a shout-out to everybody that's watching on Facebook Live. We are streaming this. And, again, this program will be available not only on iTunes but on the podcast on Blog Talk Radio as soon as we are done. Give us a call. Wow, this education piece is huge. Any final thoughts on that, Jonathan? Go ahead.
Yeah, well, I do want to touch on that. Like you said, the technology pieces within our communities has to be huge. And if we can integrate it with the technologies that the kids are using now, whether it's, you know, somehow working with TikTok, or you can get a project done doing this or a gym class, or you coordinate a dance or something like that, where it's more culturally aware, you know, to help our kids. And if we're trying to really be honest about education, we know that most of the education that we want is going to be all comprehension. So we want kids to actually comprehend what they're doing, what they're learning, and so they can integrate into a system that they can flourish in. And, you know, and especially our community, and whether it's teaching them, you know, and I go back to the major pieces, 50% of Americans work at a small business or own a small business. So teaching them small business, showing them how to run a business, and maybe some of them can, you know, support their families, but also learn how to move up the totem pole. And you know what? Take some of the inequities out. We'll create some, but hopefully in this new educational system, we'll be able to we'll be able to figure it out. So that's my little touches on that.
That's cool. The time is 10 a.m. We're going to switch gears a little bit, and we're going to talk about the DFL convention and how.
Wow.
Yeah, two veteran legislators just got the boot. So.
So Raymond Dean, huh? It was Raymond Dean and
Jeff Hayden.
Who else didn't get it? Jeff Hayden.
Yay!
Didn't get the white.
Well, I'm looking at the story from the Star Tribune, which I posted on our live stream on Facebook, and the both Democrats from Minneapolis, they criticized how online votes were conducted, and the two fell short against challengers. And Hayden, the Senate's assistant majority leader, Jeff Hayden, lost to Omar Fathy. That's EFATEH, and we're going to try to get him on. So, and the son of a Somali immigrant, and Dean, in his fourth term, Raymond Dean, lost to Esther Abigail, the daughter of a Nigerian immigrant. The thing is, Esther works for Cerisi Law Firm, and you know, Cerisi is ingrained in the DFL. Basically, that's my opinion, because I don't want to. You know, they sent me a letter many years ago. They sent both Ron Edwards, Cerisi Law Firm. Sent Ron Edwards and I a letter because we were talking in 2011 because we were blasting the Minneapolis Foundation in regards to the tornado relief fund because they weren't telling us who they were giving the money to, but yet the money was being distributed somewhere. And they sent us this sharply worded letter that said, you know, if you guys don't stop, we're going to be forced to take you and do this and do that and do this. And I laughed because a good friend of mine worked for the firm, and she knows that the letter was total bullshit. Excuse my French, but it was. And And so a week later, we get another letter saying, you know, just be careful, you know, guys, we're going to smack you. And I threw both of them. After I read them, I threw both of them away because it was ridiculous. But you have go ahead.
And I was going to touch on the DFL is, you know, as the DFL has its dominions, I would say, within it, and they're very selective on who they pick. And, you know, Raymond Dean, he's been here for a long time, you know. And like you always say, we don't endorse anyone, really.
Mm-hmm.
And I say the people I like, but I'm not going to really endorse them on the show. But Jeff Hayden, a lot of these people have to understand, they use you real quick for a little bit, then they spit you out, even if you're a minority leader, okay? And so when you're working within the community, remember, they're taking your ideas, okay? They take your ideas, and then they make it their own. So I think some of us who are kind of not fond of the DFL, I'm not saying nothing, I'm not getting some words in your mouth, but I've always kind of was very careful around the DFL because I've seen a lot of that behavior happen. Let's just say.
Yeah. And
Jeff Hayden, I feel bad for him because I think that he really was, you know, trying to do, you know, he's a co-author on a lot of things. I know he went behind Jesse Winkler for the cannabis bill for Minnesota, which, you know, hopefully you designed something for communities of color. So what's the check coming for communities of color that's been ravaged from, you know, arrests over marijuana and mass incarceration? And we can look at the disparity numbers. We can steal water, you know, we can look at St. Cloud or Oak Hill, any of those places, you know. But I think it's a rude awakening for some of these people who have been in Minneapolis for so long
in Minnesota especially, the DFL wants to show collaboration with black people because they have the same problems
right.
that Republicans have, right? And with people
is it on the switch though? Is it? Have you noticed a lot of what have you been noticing? Because I'm starting to notice that they're trying to get away from black individuals now.
Who are you talking about? The DFL?
Yeah, and they're trying to move into a different community.
Yeah, well, the DFL figures that okay, these children and immigrants are more palatable than black Americans. And so they're still black, but they're not the kind of black that they have to deal with these historical assumptions with. So they want to be this is the first time that a Nigerian immigrant has won or be endorsed. This is the first time that this Somali immigrant has been. And rather than deal with black America's challenges and issues, you know, like, example, Ilhan Omar, Congresswoman Ilhan Omar, who I like kind of, you know, she's fiery, but she's not doing anything for the 5th Congressional District. And,
right,
you know, they love that because, you know, this is the first time a Somali immigrant has been elected to Congress or this or from Minnesota and this. They want all these firsts because they don't have to answer to black
right.
Minnesotans that were born and raised here, black Americans. And it's terrible, but
you can see that happening in the small Somalian community, and I think that this is a great opportunity. And I just thought of this too, Don. This is a great opportunity for black people to be the first in the Republican Party. So guess what? You've seen Lacey Johnson. He went to the Republican Party. You know, maybe he's been Republican, but he went over there. He got Donald Trump's endorsement.
Yes.
That quick.
And that means
a black man,
yeah,
a business owner.
Yeah, and that means money. And the funny thing about it is, you know, I know a lot of people that are like down with the DFL, and we have these conversations. We don't call each other names or anything like that. But I say, well, look at it. Jeff Hayden is the assistant with majority to chair or whip or whatever it is, and he's been there for a long time. And sometimes you become ineffective in your role. Sometimes you have these boutique bills that help your friends, the Urban League, Turning Point, whoever it might be. You're helping your buddies. You're not really doing anything on behalf of the community. And so
right.
my interactions and Mr. Edwards' interactions before me with Jeff Hayden has been anything but cordial and diplomatic. I mean, you hate for a brother to get bucked out, but, you know, if you're not doing anything and you think you're a celebrity versus a community representative in the state capitol,
right.
then it's time for you to go.
Right.
But, you know, we don't know how these other
right.
people will react. Is it the same? Will it be more of the same old? Will they focus on immigrant issues and put black American issues on the back burner? I mean, we have some really huge disparities in this state, and we know that. But how would these people address it? And that's something that I have not heard. And, you know, these delegates and these conventions, I would love to see the numbers and the demographics profiles of the people that actually got online and did the voting. And
right.
and I will just go as far to say that the disparities in there, the people of color, are low. And so these are people saying, oh, yeah, Jeff Hayden, you know, let's get this new person. You know, we don't have to deal with these black American talking points anymore, these disparities. We're just
right,
going to.
Because pressure.
Yeah.
Because the pressure from individuals like us or our black news, or we're going to ask these hard questions to Lacey Johnson and Toya Woodland, Jeff Hayden, and Raymond Deans. We're going to ask them their questions and what they're going to do. And they know black America has been waiting for our time to be able to address our concerns and issues and not have them be placed on the back burner, because guess what? They don't mind refugees becoming the new blacks, and they don't mind having them start at the bottom and actually circumvent some of our issues to help their issues, just to diminish our issues. And we know these inequities and disparities are here. It's clear. Okay. Yeah. And so that's why, you know, it's vital that we keep and hold these people to the highest standards. It's Jeff Haven. Please call in. I see you tune in sometimes, and just please call in and give us your intake on what happened with the DFL and how long you've been working for them and why did they do this and why won't they let you put any bills in your name and for the community and instead of being a co-sponsor all the time? Why do we have to always hang on the coattail?
Well, if you look at it, John, the way that I look at it, I mean, I'm not asking you to think like I think, but just to think. But if you look at it this way, the last real major thing they had was the 13th grade with the Urban League when Scott Gray was the president of the Minneapolis Urban League.
My position.
Yeah, the 13th grade was a ridiculous waste of money because by then the Urban League has closed both of the schools. And how were they going to facilitate that? Because that's not even enough to pay the teachers that you need. And that was pushed through by Bobby Joe Champion, Senator Bobby Joe Champion, and Jeff Hayden. And so that was a problem. And I think people in the legislature and community members in those areas, especially where Jeff Hayden is, are tired of this lip service and these smiles. And, you know, you're not a celebrity. Right. You still have to have the eye of the tiger. And you still need to fight for your people because if you really look at it, things have gone downhill and not uphill for anybody. So those districts, there's still a lot of shootings, murders, gang violence, drug trafficking, human trafficking, and the unemployment rates are in double digits. I mean, in Radine's area and Jeff Hayden's area. And so,
hey, you know, and that's huge. When you just touched on that, they're already at double digits, okay?
Mm-hmm.
Now the pandemic hit. And I, you know, could it be 20%, 30%, 40%, 50% unemployment rates in some of these areas? Does violence kick up? Do we need new leadership? What does that look like for these communities that are going to be ravaged after the coronavirus? And I know we were talking about it earlier, J.P. Morgan and a lot of these financial institutions are predicting. Okay, not me, not Don. They're predicting that it's going to take 10 to 12 years for us to get back to the numbers we were at. Now, if you think about it, a lot of other people aren't willing to give those jobs up. And if you're at the bottom of the totem pole, the black community, we're going to be let go. If you've been making a little ruckus at your job, coronavirus has now put the damp on your whole entire fire team. They're going to let you go with unemployment, but in July and August, when it runs out, and it's going to be summertime time.
Yeah.
You think that the shootings are ticking up now, and we got KG Wilson over here at this vigil and over here, it's going to be all over. Mm-hmm. In these areas where Ray Dean and Jeff Hayden reside.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. And the things that are happening in our community are just horrendous. And, you know, how do you fix it? I mean, they throw millions. You know, the Northside Achievement Zone has received over $50 million. No change.
Unbelievable.
Before that, the Environment Zone, over $50 million. No change. But what they're doing now is, like, the Minnesota Department of Health has an RFP out for diverse media. I don't think we're going to get anything because black is in the title of our news agency here, and they kind of run away from that. And plus, they have some community folks that are supposed to be up there doing what they're supposed to do and decide. And so if anybody else is up there, they could say, oh, no, you don't want to use them. So I did send a request for information into them to find out who they're picking, you know, and who were the people making them decisions. And so it's really weird when you look at it and you try to figure out, you know, the Minnesota Department of Health historically has failed folks over the many years, and they've made overpayments to daycare facilities, to the Native American tribes, and then they're trying to get the money back. And yet, when you have important information that needs to go out to the community, and you're doing a service for the community, you know, they overlook you and ignore you, especially if you're black Minnesotan doing something like we're doing. And this is a historical.
Especially a black man.
Yeah, this is historical, and it has to be stopped. So I'm going to mount, after I get this information, I'm going to mount a little attack against the Minnesota Department of Health And I have a couple of you Minnesota senators that are willing to join in and speak to facts. And so we're going to have to deal with them and deal with their shady self and make sure that, you know, we get what we need in our community. Because the other day, man, I'm going up to Target, and I parked at the far end so no one hits my whip. And I walked up, and there's these black teenagers, 14, 15, 16, walking. And they say, "Hey, bro, why you got a mask on?" And I'm like, "Don't you notice that a lot of people are wearing masks?" And they say, "Yeah, but why?" I said, "Do you guys watch the news? Do you know what's going on?" He says, "Yeah, we know about the coronavirus, but what's up? Where do we get a mask from? Where do we, you know, what's going on? When we going to go back?" They had no information at all whatsoever. So I hipped them, and I have some of those disposable masks. I gave each of them one of these disposable masks. I said, "Y'all need to wear these everywhere."
And see, and that's vital.
Mm-hmm.
That's vital. And this is why our black news is vital. So when we're asking for, you know, we do this all free. We're losing money doing this. Mm-hmm. But we know that this this information is vital. And when there is a pandemic going on, and we have companies like 3M and Honeywell, and we work at the essential role positions at these jobs, you know, cleaners and all this, we should be holding these companies accountable and saying, you know what, due to racism, oppression, all that, our community, can you work with our black news, 3M, and help us distribute N95 masks? We know you guys can produce 95 million in a month, because they just said they're going to ramp up productions for 95 million N95 masks right here in Minnesota. There's no reason why 6 million Minnesotans shouldn't be all able to have at least a couple masks out of that 95 million. Just because you're residing here, you're getting profits from Minnesota, you use us to be the workers, we're on the front line. Why not work with the black news to get this information out so we can send people to a spot where they can get the adequate PPE, this protective, this personal protective equipment? Mm-hmm. Is vital, especially for the black community. It is really vital because we know we're in these essential roles. I go up to the dollar store, I go up to some of these places, they don't even got masks, man. The dollar store just got some workings, got all these people popping up on them, barely got the little plexiglass up there. The virus just goes right around the plexiglass.
Yeah.
And it's like we're not even prepared. And when this all comes down, I'm really afraid. And hopefully you do archive these, and I know you do. We'll go be able to go back and say, you know what? The second wave, before the second wave hit, we were trying to get 3M to give us the adequate funding and the appropriate PPE to help our community. And you guys failed us within Minnesota. You failed us.
Yeah, they did. And that call the number 347-426-3904. Again, that number is 347-426-3904. We ask that you pick up your phone, dial the number, and you will not get on camera, but
please call in.
We'll hear your voice. And when we're having these kind of conversations, Jonathan, a lot of people do not call in. And that's just because of lack of facts. And I don't want to challenge anybody or beat them down. And I think we're being respectful with Ray Dean and Jeff Aiden during this program. But there are some community concerns, especially on Jeff Aiden's side, of what have you done for us lately? What did you do for us in the past? How can you justify you arguing about this process when, you know, you probably should think of doing some voter ID? You know, if you're that concerned about these results, you know, they've been trying to push this thing. And I know they say voter ID, you know, it affects black people. But, hey, I have to use my ID to cash check, buy a fishing license, go to the VA for Snelling. And
no, hey, don't let them lie to you. Don. And this is why we have to see, they do this to make it seem like they're trying to be equitable. Black people have IDs. You can't move around our society without an ID. That's almost a murder sentence. We know that that's not the case. And we know that black folks do have it. And you know what? We don't need any bailouts. Obama didn't bail us out. We don't need no bailouts. All we need is the adequate people like Jeff Hayden in these roles to work the powers that may be to get legislation done. So if we're begging about body cams, if we're begging about education equity, if we're talking about PPE, you're fighting on the front lines for South Minneapolis. Raymond Dean, you're going on the north side. Hey, everybody else, you know, we need this now. Not now, but right now. And history in the future would tell us that we were way ahead of the ballgame, Don.
Yeah, you're absolutely
way
right.
Way ahead of the ballgame.
You're absolutely right. And, I mean, it's just, you know, we have to, every one of us has the capabilities of making a list of things we'd like to see in our community that not only benefits us, but also benefits the masses. I suggest we sit down and we make a list. And then we look at these politicians and who is willing to talk to us. You know, Bobby Joe Champion, Senator Bobby Joe Champion, Jeff Haymore won't even shake my hand if I see him in public. And
that's unacceptable.
And that's
just, unacceptable.
That's not right at all. And so if they're not going to shake my hand in public, they're not going to listen to me. I've copied them on emails regarding teachers licensing in black teachers in Minnesota. They've never responded to one ever. And State Representative Rena Moran never responded to anything. And you have all these constructs being built for black people, and we're not in the room. Even our elected officials are not even in the room. Back in 2014, when it was called the Council on Black Minnesotans, put together over a $200 million legislative agenda for black Minnesotans. And when they did that, the first thing Rena Moran and Bobby Joe and Jeff and all those did was get rid of the executive director by writing a new bill that he had to re-interview for his job and reformatting their contact with Governor Dayton. So Edward McDonald was actually kicked out of a job for basically writing a $200 million plus legislative agenda for the black community. Now we have Justin Terrell, who's the executive director, and they hired some other young lady, and they can't fight their way out of a paper bag to do anything, a wet paper bag at that. You know, wet paper bags, they tear pretty quickly. You know, they can't even get, not even a plastic bag, it's a paper bag, and it's wet.
And that's, you hit on a major point. They have these, you know, these committees, the African-American Heritage. Oh, do we have somebody?
Yeah, we have a caller here real quick. Caller 3275, you're live on Our Black News. What's your question?
Okay, this is Queen. Did you got me in here, Don?
Yeah, you're in there. You're in there.
Okay. So this is really interesting, man, that you bring this about these politicians. And I think
Yay!
I said this before. I think I said this before. You know, the problem is that we got to really stop disliking on Don Allen, real talk, because Don, we know, you know, that you might not be DFL. Okay, you got to stop disliking on Queen, because Queen is straight to the point. When I go over there to that Capitol, they see me over there, they don't teach you how to introduce a bill, they don't teach you how to write a bill, they don't teach you how to author, or who can author a bill, or who sits on what committees. They want you to figure that all out. Well, guess what we just figured out? That if you do a poor job in your community, your constituents won't vote for you. They won't put you back in office. So the issue is that if you're not going to teach people how to overcome some of these issues and stop spotlighting these issues, you know, you could throw a camera on anything. We know about mass incarceration. We know that the DHS has been holding on to people's criminal records and not allowing them to get certain licenses, when there's people out here who have changed their life 10 and 12 years ago. And when we come to them and ask them to write a bill or amend a bill and put these bills out there that will better help people get jobs, and they don't do it, you just show the whole community that you don't care whether they get a job, whether they have some housing, or whether they're ready to change. And those bills could actually open up job markets for them. So I'm saying this because I think it's pitiful that we have to let organized people like them, so like the immigrants, come in and take your seats. Oh well.
Yeah.
Oh well. Oh well. Now you paying attention that you decided with them instead of helping black folks, and now they get to come together and vote you out. And vote you out. So go get unemployment like the rest of the 30 million people that's out here that's unemployed, and you'll pay more closer attention when you see certain people out here in the Capitol that's really trying to get some bills passed that could help their community. Like my issue has been vacant properties, having black folks have first right to refusal in their communities so that they can actually have some more ownership and also be able to pass that wealth down to their children. Everybody should be able to have some generational wealth. And when we see that if we elect y'all in the office and we see that you're not doing what you're supposed to do, we don't have no feelings for you when you get voted out. Hey, you feel like you wasn't really there for the people. And that's what happens. Yeah. So I'm going to yield the mic on that.
Well, don't go anywhere, Queen. Stay here. Let me explain something to you here real quick. Here's what happened, because, you know, I've been following this with Mr. Edwards over many years, especially with Jeff Hayden. I'm going to talk just about Jeff Hayden's district, 59B, if I'm not mistaken. No, that's anyway, I'm talking about Jeff Hayden's district. Jeff Hayden went into the Somali community and, I feel, in my opinion, treated them like second-class citizens. Like, I'm a black Minnesotan, I'm this elected official. I want you to support me, and I'll do a little bill here and there. In the meantime, the Somali community that is very intelligent in Minnesota said, let's dissect and deconstruct what this person is doing, because I think that one of our people can do it better. Boom, here comes Ilhan Omar, okay? Now, they're sitting back and they're looking. You know, we need to do that locally. We're watching what Jeff Hayden does, but we're a little bit more organized than the black Minnesotans. We're going to go out, we're going to put boots on the ground, and we're going to start talking within our tribes, our community, our Ayman, and get the word out. And so what they did was they started a movement underneath a movement which layered whatever Jeff Hayden had going on, that celebrity status, and that celebrity status from Jeff didn't work this time, because the community, support community sat there, and they reached out to everyone everywhere. And remember, people from Somalia don't have the they do wear the mask, but they don't have the same historical affiliation that
trauma.
Americans have, slavery and civil rights, and they have to discover it. They discover it by surprise. Like in the Noor case, Mohammed Noor. You know, no police officer ever in Minnesota has ever been convicted and put in jail for shooting a black person or another person. Then all of a sudden, the community's in a war about, oh, yeah, these police are shooting black men all over, and then this black police officer in Minnesota shoots a white female dead, and the first police they send to jail in Minnesota is a Somali immigrant. It's not a white cop.
Correct.
Wow. It's not an Italian cop. I mean, they sent a Somali immigrant to jail for a police officer for a murder. Nothing is self-directed for the many past murders that have happened in Minnesota by law enforcement. But that sent a signal to the Somali community. It's like, hey, you're just as black as those black Americans. And if you look at the data from the Minnesota Department of Health, the Minnesota Department of Health, it defines what's happening. A woman from Somalia can come to Minnesota, and within 10 years, they'll have all the disparities from a black Minnesota woman that's been here all her life. breast cancer, all these health issues that were exclusive to Black Minnesotans, all these disparities, that just means that the same system that is dealing with them because of their skin color is dealing with us because of their skin color, and they're not separating.
It's stressful.
It's stressful. So you have all this stuff going on, and you have these people that are not deep thinkers. Jeff Hayden is not an intellectual giant. Linda Moran, State Representative Linda Moran, is not an intellectual giant. For that matter, Governor Chip is not an intellectual giant. So you have people making these decisions for us really have the wherewithal to make changes in our community. So if the changes are not being made in the Black community, and then you have Black organizations. I mean, everybody from these fraternities, sororities, universities, Urban League, Sabathony, there are 240 nonprofits within a mile of the Minneapolis Urban League over north. You know, that
don't forget Emerge.
Emerge, yeah. Well, Emerge is the pass-through. Emerge, you know, if you're a Black person in Minnesota, if you have a nonprofit on the north side, we're going to give $4 million, let me do it this way, $4 million to Emerge. And then Emerge's executive director, Mike Wynn, is going to decide which one of you Negroes are good Negroes. Which one of you should get some money. We're not going to give you too much. Because we actually take vacations, and you know, it's like the Stair-Step Foundation, the Minnesota Department of Health gave Alfred Babbitt and Johnson and the Stair-Step Foundation granted them $198,000 to make sure people could sign up in our community for Mensure. I asked Alfred Babbitt and Johnson. I said, you know what? You didn't call me. You didn't call anybody I know. You didn't call Al Flowers. You didn't call anybody that's doing something online or on a radio program or Mr. Edwards. What happened to the money? I said, we recorded the commercial. I said, well, the guy that you recorded the commercial with is a drug addict, and I heard that you paid him $40. Okay?
Here's the other thing, too. Here's the other thing, too, Don. You said that they divvied out $198,000. But yet, listen to what you just said. Emerge got $4 million. $198,000 ain't no money. But $4 million?
You see
what I'm saying?
We
keep falling short. I mean, the pig made $40 billion. Black folks didn't get $40 billion for Corona. Okay? You got $1,200.
Yeah.
So my thing, again, until we start really setting aside the differences and coming through and going over there, creating some bills, testifying, and letting us come through and really capitalizing and moving us forward, because we ain't moved forward. That's the issue. The big issue is Black folks have not moved forward. But we are always impacted by something. We're always the issue. We always spotlight it. And it is wrong to pin immigrants who came over here on a plane and a passport against people who came over here at the bottom of a ship. So I have to look at it in that term, too. Yeah, and it's all designed. But I keep saying this. A system designed against you is never for you. So I have to look at how people play this politics, and people want to play, we DFL, we're really for the people. I'm not seeing nothing for the people. I'm not seeing anybody out here that, you know, other than a few of us, Sasha and them is also telling people, hey, man, we need masks out here. We need hand sanitizer out here. Whatever it is, oxygen meters. Oxygen meters tell you how much oxygen is in your body. Those are indicators whether you need to be going to get tested. Where is free testing? People don't know that North Point is testing people for free, that the Native American Clinic is testing people for free. If Regents Hospital is testing people for free. They don't even know where to go get tested. So as long as people are withholding information from people and not moving black folks, for me, I have to speak about black folks. If you're not moving black folks forward, you look like you're not doing your job, period.
Yeah.
Period. Because if you can't uphold black folks, I'm sorry, go ahead.
I just want to say, you hit on something pretty big, doing your job. Doing your job. It's like, okay, we know, Queen knows she's a boots on the ground person, community person.
Yeah.
Jonathan's a community person. I'm staying in my lane and doing news. But the thing is, if disparities are there and the people that have the money, it's like I can't get 20 black men to meet me at a teacher licensing meeting and shut that shit down, you know, on any given Friday. We can't get, because what happens is one of those people in the group or two of them are weak. And the system will pull them, hey, we'll give you guys some money and we'll forget about those other guys over there. And then you can tell
Have you pinned them against them?
Yeah. And then you're sitting there, you're like, well, how did you get funding for this when I do 10 times more things than you do? And then you find out it's just a political move. You had, let's look at this. You remember the corner of Penn and Broadway? There was a DeLisi's there.
Yes. Yes,
the city of Minneapolis did a good thing. They basically gave the building to KMOJ and say, we're going to give you $700,000 to $800,000, almost $1 million, and we want you to build a new studio there. There's no on the KMOJ board of directors in the contract. Okay? So they run out to good friends and say, here goes all the money, build us a studio. Now they pay rent to the Ackerberg group. They're not showing ownership community at all. And so we have this ongoing generation of disparities on showing ownership, showing a firm structure, and making sure that, I'm going to put you on hold there for you, showing a way to that we can get ahead, that we can come up. Now, we're not whining, we're not crying, we're not doing any of this, because we both have things that we do every day, Monday through Sunday, blah, blah, blah. But the thing is, how these elected officials are going to see their time come and go rather quickly to people that not necessarily don't represent all of us, but represent a small skewing of folks in their community. Now, I'm used, and I know, Jonathan, you're used to seeing, you know, black Minnesotans be virtually ignored. But when you get these legislators that are not from the United States, didn't grow up in Minnesota, and I'm not knocking them, everybody should live the American dream. I'm a full advocate of living the American dream. They're doing it. I'm proud of them. That's great.
Right.
But then our priorities that we've been fighting for are put on the back burner. Maybe black Minnesotans Maybe black Minnesotans should use the strategy that the gay community used, because in under 3 years, they got every bill passed they wanted to pass. You know, and we've been sitting up here for 400 years and barely can get a drinking fountain put in the park in a black community. So that's the problem. That's a huge.
It's unbelievable.
Yeah.
It's unbelievable. And you touch on a lot of major points. You know, you're a teacher, you know, your wife's a professor, my wife's project manager, I'm a business owner, community activist, we're okay. You know, when we're trying to get this information out and we are trying to hold these politicians feet to the fire, and it's nothing about them per se, it's about us wanting to push an agenda forward for all of us, and where you say, hold on, we want you to, you want to be a leader, you get into these roles, now you don't lead. And you can't get in there doing that. And individuals, and I would say like myself, I like to talk, if I'm going to go for one of these roles, you guys can hold me to the fire, because it's going to be so much bill after bill after bill, because we're in dire need. Like you said, 400 years, nothing gets passed. Somali community is already passing us. They've already got more police officers on the police force than us. They've already, you know, and they've already locked up the Somalian police officers. So now they've already said, well, look, we lock up officers as well. Mm-hmm. And they lock up. Well, anyway. So, you know, a lot of this stuff is, you know, it seems like it's so easy to decipher. But, you know, like you said, a lot of these people are intellectual giants. They just can't put the two and two together. And whether it's Tim Walz, and yeah, I'm not saying Raymond Dean and them aren't, but what I'm saying is if you get into these roles, it, like Queen just touched on, if you haven't been doing nothing for us, we do not feel bad for you when you leave.
Yeah.
And we'll be can't get the knowledge, can't get this information out, and that's why you and me are doing it every day.
Yeah.
Or every Saturday.
Every Saturday, yeah. And it's a lot of interesting stuff going on right now, and, you know, we just have to be clear on what's happening and who's doing it in our community, and we definitely need to know about these politicians. Now, we don't know what's going to happen with this Jeff Hayden, Ray Dean thing, if they're going to file an official complaint or what the DFL does, but I'm pretty sure the DFL wants them to stand down and just go with
right.
the flow. Because, you know, if Jeff Hayden and Bobby Joe and Rena Moran would have been champions of voter ID, this would have never happened to them. You know?
And that's what it is right there. And then what happens is that we propel the argument for the other side and say, they don't even want to have voter ID. Think about that. When we already got all the licenses anyways, because why not use voter ID? Why not do
yeah.
it? Because we don't mind doing it. We got the right IDs for it. We got it. Don't
yeah.
think that the black community doesn't have our ID. Come on now.
Yeah, especially in Minnesota. I mean, the argument from the DFL, the argument from the DFL is hilarious. They're saying, well, if you make people show their IDs, they always go back on the black community, right? Those poor black people might not have their IDs. Trust me, fools. If you live in Minnesota and you work anywhere, you got an ID. So that's not the problem. So why?
You go to the club, you got to have ID.
Yeah, if you go down.
You got to have ID.
Yeah, anything you do. So that doesn't seem like an argument to me. That just seems like another crutch that the Democrats want to put in.
They're pandering. They think that they're pandering to this hopeless, homeless black individual when we're intellectual giants. We got more views in the Minnesota Reporter, the Post. The numbers don't lie. Guys.
Yeah.
Do they?
No, they don't. We have another call in less than 2 minutes of the show on Blog Talk Radio. We
all right.
Going. This looks like it might be Mr. Tucker. Mr. Tucker, you're live on the air. Go ahead.
You know, Don, good afternoon. Glad to listen in this morning. It's an interesting question. Queen hit it on the nose. If you know, my mom used to say, if you don't know much, you can't do much. In the 50s, we say, you go for what you know. If you don't know much, you can't do much. They do the best they can with what they have, and you really can't marginalize them. This is a historical thing. Most black people in Minneapolis spend more time trying to be accepted versus being respected. Plenty even said about our legislature that they don't bring the bacon home. Carlson said that the black community comes over to the Capitol and rag on each other, make negative statements about each other. You know, they don't know how the system works. If you don't know how the system works, you cannot make any changes. And the other thing is the old African proverb. You be leery of the naked man who offers you a shirt. These people are just trying to pay their light bill and gas bill. And they're trying to be important people. There's just too much missing. The St. Paul NAACP is now run by Somalians. And the first thing they said, we don't have any leadership. I don't know. And our problem is not the other community. Our problem is our own community. You have
yes.
more people in our community who marginalize us behind closed doors. The first thing they'll say, they'll make a lot of negative statements and don't even know they're making negative statements. There's just too many missing pieces. and I don't know whether they're educable. When they gave that building, the Lisi building, to KMOJ, they called me in, asked me a series of questions. I gave them the answers to the questions. The kind of money that they were being charged for the building exceeded the cost of tearing the building down and building it new. They were hoodwinked and played, as they said in the street corner. They were played. They didn't know they was played. And even when they was informed, I asked the dear lady, what did you say in the meeting with the information that you had? Well, I didn't say anything. There's people run to the head of the line, and they want to drive the bus. They can't drive the bus. They can't drive the bus. You have politicians like Don Samuels. He's not a bad guy. He just says that black people shouldn't be in business. The business of America is business. We're living in a capitalistic society. Why shouldn't black people participate in a capitalistic society? He didn't think they should. He had room for daycare. They had room for daycare centers and a daycare for the people that was using the program. He gave all those slots to Northeast Minneapolis. He did not use one black daycare in North Minneapolis.
Nope.
You know, the need to be accepted is great in our community.
I know he's on the school board, and he's a nice guy. Got to hold them accountable. And you know, him and his wife, we got to hold them accountable. You get $50 million, and you ain't talking to the community leader? I don't know what's going on. And they reached out to me. You know, they reached out to me, but I'm not going to try to, I can't have them. I don't scratch my head when it doesn't itch. I can't do it. I just can't do it. And it's, instead of us trying to be accepted, like you said, Mr. Tucker, we got to be respected.
Yep. Yep. So it's one of those things. Thanks for the call, Mr. Tucker. It's one of those things, Jonathan, that we have to look at, that we have to be absolutely sure that we need a direction, a firm direction of solutions, because what you see now in our community are a lot of people talking about things. It's real easy,
right,
for us to get up at 8 o'clock on a Saturday morning, prepare for this show, and go on and broadcast and stay in our lane and do stuff through the week. But what happens in the background? Who are the people carrying the torch actually moving forward to address these issues at the core? And our black elected officials have the celebrity status thing is stopping them from even, you know, addressing what we need to have addressed. And while I change my, because I want to go to outer space on this one. You know, they're not addressing the things that need to be addressed in our community. They don't feel that they have to. And when you ask them questions like, how was it that the Minnesota Department of Health overpaid the Native American health clinics over what we know, over $25 million? That hasn't happened at North Point. That hasn't happened at any clinics in
never.
Never. And so how does that happen and you don't address that? Because obviously, they didn't miss the money, right? They were like, oh, oops, we overpaid them $25 million.
You know what it is? You know what it is, and you touched on it right there. How could this happen? Well, remember with Justine DeMond.
Mm-hmm.
They demanded justice, and she got $20 million. Jeremiah Ellison, Felipe Cunningham, we had Andrea, Cameron Gordon. They all voted for her family to get $20 million. But guess what happened when Jamar Clark, when they had the vote and we demanded they do it? Guess what they gave them? 1%. It's the same group of people. We love you guys. We're fighting for justice, and we're DFL, and we love the Democrats. But when it's time for them to make a decision for black folks, they are nowhere to be found.
Yes.
Got to hold these. They get in. And we have black politicians that try to use us, and then don't even do nothing for us when they get into power in Minnesota.
Yeah, exactly. And you know what? I'm going to see if we can get Rita Moran on or whoever, and next week try to get some of these endorsed candidates on and talk to them about what they're going to do. And it's very interesting.
Oh, also, I want to talk to John.
Yes.
John Thompson, because he just so they didn't get endorsed, but John Thompson actually did get endorsed by the DFL. And I know he was going through a lot with the DFL to try to get that endorsement. So if we can maybe, I'm going to reach out to him. But, John, if you can call in or come in next week, we would love to have you on the show because you were DFL endorsed, and we really want to know what was going on.
Yeah, that'd be really good. And, you know, the DFL has had its problems as well as the Republicans. And, I mean, we just – our vote is something that we own. Excuse me, no one else owns that. And we should probably take time and decide this election, especially this 2020 election, more so than any other election in the past, of if we just want to run up there and put Ilhan in office, if we want to run up there and put these other guys in office, you have to make sure you put people in office that will call you. It's like Friday morning I get up and Senator Mark Thurin calls me. He's on the phone. Hey, Don, he's asking questions. This is a Republican senator, state of Minnesota. He doesn't even cover Minneapolis or St. Paul, right? He's in, like, the urban area. But yet he had a question about something, and he wanted me to be objective. I could have said,
right.
I could have said, oh, man, this is that. And this, I says, no, let's look at it from all angles, you know? The state has a huge surplus, and what's-his-face, Walz dives into that and uses that, and then he has $2.4 trillion over here, or a billion, excuse me, that he could use, and he has another money, a safety net about that much that he could use. Why did he go into the surplus first? You know, what was that about?
Right.
And remember
when you posted that? You posted that on your page, and I guess somebody who went, oh, it was Raymond Dean, actually. Raymond Dean jumped on there and said, well, you guys' numbers are off, so I try to hold it to the – well, since the numbers are off, you tell me exactly what the numbers are. Then we had to get them to get the numbers out, you know. And so now that this money is there, there's not a deficit. Somebody said there was a deficit, but we knew we were running a surplus.
Yes.
What are we doing, Tim Walz? We got to get leadership. We got to, and we're going to hold, and like you said, we're not, you know, we might be in one way or be in another, but we're independent critical thinkers. You know, James Baldwin said it, you have to be a critical thinker to progress forward, and that's what we're doing, Don.
Yeah, and it's an important piece because, I mean, we're watching in real time, and we're focused now because of the state shutdown, basically, and the stay-at-home order.
Right.
So we can pay more attention to what's going on. And we're watching literally billions of dollars being transferred from the state to other hands. But if you look at the Minnesota's Black, Hispanic, and Native American community, they're like they're sprinkling breadcrumbs on our meatloaf. Okay? And we don't even have enough to put in the meatloaf to make it heartier, you know? And so who addresses that? Does Bobby Joe Champion, Senator Bobby Joe Champion, address that? Does Senator Jeff Hayden address it? No. Does State Representative Rena Moran address it? No. You have these people. Does Justin Terrell from the Council on Black Minnesotans, African Heritage, does he address it?
No.
No. Does what black organization addresses this windfall? See, the Chinese don't have a word for crisis. They call it opportunity, okay? We are now in an opportunity in this deconstruction time to look at, okay, the economy eventually is going to open up one day. How can we position black Minnesotans to make money? Is the state going to legalize marijuana so that some of our black businesses can open up dispensaries in our communities rather than have
people? Yeah, without...
Yes.
Without paying $10,000 for a permit or something like that.
Yeah. And so you have to have all this stuff done because what's going to happen is like in Colorado, they have to mail their citizens' checks. Colorado's been mailing their citizens' checks for a grip, $600,000, $800,000, because they've made so much money on the sale of the recreational use of marijuana. So why not? While I do not partake in that activity, I can see the economic value of legalizing that, because then you have people with their hands out all the time talking about, give me a grant, give me this. Well, take that money, put a 15% tax on it, and watch the lines at the dispensaries line up, and watch Minnesota start making a million or more a week just on legalizing that. And I think that's an important thing for us to do. But yet when you bring it back to our black elected officials, they just kind of look at you like, you know, like one of them might say, well, you might put some of my family members out of business. yeah. And so, I mean, with that said, you have to make sure that this thing works. I mean, they're bailing out the banks, they're bailing out the car dealerships, they're bailing out small businesses, hotels. But, I mean, you get about $1,200 from the stimulus. And you look at it, you're like, yeah, whatever. That's one. And then you have people like, it's really funny because people aren't really paying attention.
In the history of America, ironically, and this is so crazy, people claim, you know, they claim, oh, Donald Trump is the most racist ever. Hey, when you look at the numbers, he's given more money to the black, and I have to speak facts and the truth. He's given more money to black Americans through that $1,200, that little check. I don't want to use any bad words, but I would say that little check for $1,200 was the most the black community has ever had, and there's no bailouts for us. There's bailouts for, like you said, the auto industry, the airplane industry, the businesses, Donald Trump's hotels, and Joe Biden's people. And now our Democratic nominee is the guy who did mass incarceration, exactly what the Democratic Party is totally against now, but he's the one who wrote the 1994 crime bill. The hypocrisy is alarming. It sounds like tornado sirens going off in my head.
Yeah, and then...
You know,
you're absolutely right, and we have about, let me see here, we have about 3 minutes left of the show, but when you look at what's going on, when you look at what's happening, and you look at the amount of money being spent out there and the hypocrisy, because, you know, we've seen it, Jonathan, people run to the state capitol, and they say the most important item concerned in the black community is mass incarceration, felon voting. Or the opportunity to vote, ban the box, and do all this stuff. And it's really interesting because those aren't the top 10, but they aren't the 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. Look at the homeless encampment in South Minneapolis. That's growing like crazy. That's growing. The homeless encampment in South Minneapolis and along the...
Yeah, but did they just put them all in a hotel?
Yeah, they're trying to, but there are people with mental illnesses and other things that they're not going to go into hotels. And they're not, and I drove by there, and I see just as many tents and stuff out there as were last week or the week before. And so what happens with the coronavirus? Why are those people still disenfranchised? Granted, they're mostly Native Americans, and, you know, we're living basically on their property, their stolen property. So why are they still like this? This has been going on for 4 years now. Mr. Edwards and I talked about this years ago. The encampments pop up. There's one on Lake in Hiawatha. And you drive by there, you're going like, what the hell? You know, this shouldn't happen in a small state, minority ethnic population, and the money that's being passed around right now. And that Minnesota Department of Health, that thing needs an enema. I mean, stuck right in and put the hose on blast. Because they are failing the black community, the Hispanic Latino community, the Native American community, the Asian community, in the United States. And I will never forget, never, ever forget the meeting they called me to at the Minnesota Department of Health that asked me, you know, to do outreach and paid me to the Native American and black community and Hispanic Latino community. And I walked in the room, there were 7 white females. And they said, we just can't connect. I don't got a problem with them being white females at all. But my logic to them was that, hey, maybe if you hire some black folks, some Native American folks, some Hispanic Latino folks, or if you have any in the building, why don't you ask them? Ask them. And they, you know, that was like, that was an epiphany. Oh, yeah, maybe we should. Yeah. He's right. But you had to make it think that you had to make them think it was their own idea. I've been talking too long, and we're coming up on to close out the Blog Talk Radio show here with some James Brown, and we can continue for 5 more minutes. Let's just do this because you got to make Blog Talk Radio happy.